founder of the British movement Wages for Housework, which has spread now not only from Great Britain, but also across the seas, and there's a branch in Toronto, and there are also branches, I think, in several other places. And the interview is sort of interesting because it gives us a fairly good indication of the way the women's movement moves in another country that is quite similar to ours, but also has its differences. And it also addresses the subject of work and the survival of all of us in the capitalist society as it is presently structured. So, what you are about to hear, again, is a taped interview with Marjorie Collins asking the questions and Selma James providing the answers that was put together some months ago in England. The tape, by the way, is about, I would guess, about 40 minutes long. And what I am hoping to do after that is to field some phone calls if any of you have any comments.
I think it would be very good if you could just sum up, as you have in some of your work here, once more, the relationships of the various parts of the working class as you see them, and then we can go on from there.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that there's an international division of labor, and that work is divided among us in a planned way. The work that women will do, the work that children will do. That is, it depends on what part of the world, but certainly children must be prepared to be the workers of the future, either in schools or in plantations, depending on whether it's a third world country or a metropolitan country. The work that men will do, and that also overlaps in the way, in terms of races, the work that certain races of people will do, and to be identified by that work, and to be in a hierarchical structure among people who work. That is, there is not only a hierarchy between those who rule us and those of us who are ruled, but within those who are ruled, there is a hierarchy. And that hierarchy is enforced by the amount of power that each of us has. And that power is embodied, is symbolized, and is actually concretely expressed by the amount of money that we have. So that those of us who are full-time housewives have no money at all of our own. Those of us who are black or third world peoples tend to have less money than others, sometimes no wages at all, like housewives, like full-time housewives, working on the land, on a subsistence farm, trying to sell something, selling very little, but hoping that at least what you grow there, among what you grow, there will be some crop that you can eat and survive on. Those of us who work in so-called unskilled industries, those of us who work in more skilled industries, those of us who are so-called professionals, and up the ladder. Now, it's very mystifying when you look at the whole thing because it looks like, well, there are some women in this. For example, in journalism, there are a few. And we know about tokenism so that we're not fooled by that too much anymore. But it's pretty clear that from birth, our destinies are laid out in a general way. Now, to say that it's an absolute and that nobody can move from one level of the hierarchy to another is really to misunderstand the way that hierarchy operates, in the sense that if there were no fluency at all, it would not operate. It's precisely that you can move a little bit down and that you have the threat of moving down, or you can move a little bit up and you have the tantalizing possibility of moving up, that allows the hierarchy to function at all. So that it's not
to
that...
To give motivation.
To give motivation and to threaten, both at the same time. But that these patterns are laid out and that you can see that on an international level is very clear. You know where the money is, or rather you know where some workers have some more money and therefore have power over other workers. And that's how we stand in relation to men. Now, when I say we, I mean all of we women. Because, for example, the wife of an executive of a large American multinational corporation has a fine house to live in, has very well-dressed children, has no money worries in the sense that she doesn't know exactly what's in the fridge at any particular moment. She doesn't have to know for her survival. But she has to know that she has that man, or all of this will disintegrate before her eyes. In other words, she is in a slave relation to him, and she does not have the power that he has. She is attached to the power that he has to the degree that he allows her to remain attached to him.
Do you have a lot of older women in this country who are very poverty stricken?
Of course.
Or do they get a family allowance? Do they continue to get a family allowance?
No, they don't. Family allowance stops when the children grow up. Being a mother doesn't stop ever. And not only that, being a mother doesn't stop in the sense that your concern, your guilt over whether your child is happy long after he or she is a child is something that you have to live with, because the society has placed the responsibility on the quote success of your child on you, which is one of the most horrendous and most violent crimes which is committed against women, in my view. I feel this very personally because I feel that I'm suffering from it, and I've tried very hard to free myself and have understood from the degree to which I have not freed myself just how difficult it is, and impossible it is really, to shake the work that you have been shaped to do, and that you cannot individually break from. Only all women breaking from it can liberate you. You can't liberate yourself. It's nonsense, this business of there being liberated women. I don't know, maybe in Mars there are liberated women, but I'm a slave. And I shall always be a mother because I once gave birth. And in a very important sense, all of us are mothers, whether or not we've given birth, because we mother each other. And that's very much part of our housework. We keep each other going. We women keep each other going. I mean, when our friends are in trouble, they come to us. They don't go to the men, who sometimes are the cause of the trouble. They go to other women, and we mother them. We coddle them. We help them. We give them compassion and sympathy and a place
Nothing
to go to.
Nothing wrong with those characteristics.
Nothing wrong with them, except that they are exclusively a female function. And that is so deeply built into our personalities that we very often do it even though we don't want to do it, even to people we don't want to do it to, because that is what it is to be female. That is what we've always been trained to do. And when we say we want a wage for housework, we want to label, to pin, to identify, to make a map of every single piece of terrain where we are forced by the very structure of our personalities to perform forced labor, to perform forced work. We want to get a wage so we can love. And that's very different from working for love. You know, when we work for love, our capacity to love is undercut because we are always performing duties rather than anything that really flows from the way that we would like to behave. We don't know how we would like to behave. We only know how we have been trained to behave, because that is functional to the society in which we are living. But this business of being mothers is absolutely crucial, because the new plan, what's that woman's name? The anthropologist, Margaret Mead, I debated her on the television for an hour once, And she said, we have to get to the drawing boards and draw society up all over again. Well, no society is going to be drawn up for me. I'm finished with their plans for me. I mean, I would like to make some plans for myself, but her plan included the fact that the grandmother should see after the children so that the young women can go out to work. Well, it's not a liberation for the young women. And I am not going to be a grandmother. Really, I mean, I'm not again going to be put into harness to see after the next generation of children, which seems to be the way that society is heading. Cutting down our nursery schools is immediately an attack on older women. It's not only an attack on younger ones, it's not only an attack on children, it's an attack on older women, because we are going to be pulled into another set of work, into another round of motherhood, another round of caring, not because we want to see those children, but because if we don't get there at 7 o'clock in the morning before our daughters and sons leave for work, they're not going to bring that wage home. And because we're in a very difficult financial situation, sometimes our subsistence is dependent on taking that role again, you know, and
so
doing
we'll
that work again.
So we'll get free dinner then.
So we'll get free dinner. So they'll give us a gift at Christmas, or put another $50, slip another $50 to us, because after all, we do help, you know. Well, we don't want to help.
Tell me, what do the older women live on? Do they have a pension at a certain age?
Yes, at 60. And in this country, the pensions are, first of all, the pensions are scandalously low.
Of course they are at home too.
Second of all, if a woman who is on pension with a man separates from that man, she gets the pension through him, and she's only entitled to 8 of the 21 pounds that the couple gets.
We at least get half at home, which is small bonus.
Yes. Right, yes. I mean, they share the poverty in different ways, but really sharing the poverty is not what we're on about. The kind of dependence that the very old and the very young are forced to undergo is a direct result of the fact that only those who are getting a wage have any status or power.
Could you talk for a minute about the way you see the role of the unions as working with capital more than for workers?
Well, the very fact that unions are organizations which are supposedly set up to deal with those people who have wages excludes most of the population, because most of us don't have wages.
Well, that's true. But when unions first started, they were a kind of progressive thing, that workers should organize at all. But you feel that they have outgrown this role, that they're more and more enmeshed with the bosses. And
they certainly are.
That they perpetuate the differences between the various groups in the working class by working, calling for more wages, more benefits.
Well, I don't think they call for more wages, actually. They're at the moment organizing, negotiating with the state about how big the wage freeze is going to be.
Oh. Well, that's what's happening here, right.
Yeah, they say, well, I mean to say, we don't want a wage freeze, because a wage freeze is a wage cut.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we're working for wages or it's the men that we depend on who are working for wages, we know that if the wages go down, that the housekeeping money goes down. And we know that we work much harder when there's less money, because we can't eat out as much, we have to cook at home. We can't buy that washing machine, we have to wash by hand. We spend a lot of our mental energy wondering whether it's cheaper to buy beans at this shop or to go 4 blocks further down the high street in order to get beans where it's 1/2 pence cheaper. I mean, can you imagine that our minds are being taken up with such trivia? That is an insult to us, it's a degradation of us, it's work. Work which we don't want to do, and which is forced upon us the less and less money that we have. But if you really look we really have just been crossed out of the working class, crossed out of the possibility of struggle, crossed out of whether or not our time and lives are important. If we're very young, we're not entitled to money at all. we have to get up very early in the morning, go to school, come home from school, do work. If we're women, we're girls, we help our mothers in the house, we do a lot of housework. Nowadays, boys also do some of that. When we reach a certain age where we can't go out to work or where we are made redundant by the men that we're married to, we either try to get a job, which is very difficult to get because youth and productivity go together. And in any case, if we're thrown to a pension, we're again dependent people. And by this time, we're also very tired from having worked all of our lives. And if we're women, we're continuing to do housework, even if we're on in that single room, in that bed sitter. It's not less housework if you live in one room. In some senses, it's more housework because you must keep it tidy all the time, otherwise you're living in a permanent mess. And you have to keep a certain order in that room that you don't if you have a big flat, because your mind gets very disordered if you have only one room, you know, and it's the one place where you can invite friends and all the rest. Your whole social life revolves around one room, so that your actual amount of housework, it may not be as great, but it is more intense and much more connected with your survival. So you don't really stop doing housework if even your space is cut down. In a sense, your housework is much more of an imposition on you. I just think we never stop.
About this wages for housework demand, you told me that you really mean it.
Yes.
And that you really think it's possible to get it.
Yes.
And I'd like to know how you think it's possible to get it.
I think it's possible to get it because it is such a broad front of unification among women. Now, we know that the women's movement has talked about sisterhood, but we feel that sisterhood has to be made really very concrete, and we have to say who and who is our sister and who is not our sister. It's true that all women, whatever their status in society, are shaped by the fact that most of us don't have money for our housework. But it's also true that these women are really have escaped housework, that some women have escaped housework. The Queen of England, I don't think, needs wages for housework, because I don't think she does very much, and I think she's extremely well rewarded for the housework that she does do. She's one of the richest people in the world. But
of course, if Britain fell, she might not be.
If Britain fell, well, if Britain fell, we would none of us be housewives. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's the first thing to go. Not because we would stop sweeping the floor. I don't know how we would keep a house after that. I don't know what kind of a house we'd live in. I don't know how we would live. I know that this one has to go. What we'll replace it with will not be done on Margaret Mead's drawing board, but on many of us coming together and deciding how we would like to shape the world. And it's about time that we did. But the point is that housework, because so many of us do it, and because all of us are weakened by the fact that we have to do it, that is the broadest point on which we can organize.
By the way,
is where our sisterhood is based.
This is sort of a little interruption, but many women in New York are doing practically no housework. They're just neglecting everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable. I don't do very much housework,
mm-hmm.
just enough to keep the papers straight. But it's uncomfortable.
Yes.
I mean, you want to do more. I know that if I do it, I'll never do enough to make it satisfying to me the way it looks or anything. So I don't know how you cope with that, because after all, we're living today.
Right. You know? Yes, and we're always balancing the housework budget. I mean, how much can we stand of dust as compared to how much time can we afford to give to dusting? And we're all in that dilemma. And we make our different balances, and every once in a while we say, well, everything has got to go, and I must clean this house because otherwise I can't bear it. Women are more and more cutting down on their housework because women are more and more finding other things that they want to do. And I think that's one of the most important things about the campaign for wages for housework, because women so want money of their own that they are ready to stop doing a little housework to go to be with other women to try to get that money.
So how do you think it's going to come about here in England?
It's going to come about here in England in the same way that it's going to come about in the United States and in other countries, and it's not going to come about here in England unless it does come about in other countries as well. I think it has to be international or it won't work at all. By our continually putting our struggles together and seeing what is really the component of those struggles. When we last year mobilized for what we call a street event, which is going to the high street where women shop and having puppet shows and singing and making speeches to women from different situations, and we went to speak to a group of pensioners, and you must know that three-quarters of the pensioners, I think the percentage is three-quarters of the pensioners in Britain are women. Three-quarters. The pensioners, some of them were very enthusiastic and said, well, I should have been getting money all the time for all the work I did.
Where were they all together? At a
pensioners meeting.
Oh.
A meeting of pensioners. But some of them said, but if you get wages for housework, they'll give us less in pension. Which is exactly how they put us one against the other. And we were saying, no, that's what they tell us. They tell us the same thing, that if you get a rise in pensions, then there's less for us. And they're always putting those of us who have very little against each other and saying that there's only this size pie, and if you take too big a slice, well, you'll take some from us, but there isn't a pie that size at all. There's an enormous amount of wealth, and we are all entitled to have it because we are the ones who made it. We made that wealth. That wealth didn't just come about. It didn't just grow like Topsy. You know, it came because we worked very hard in our kitchens, in offices, in factories, we women and we men. And we have a right to that money. And the women really have been organizing as pensioners and demanding an increase in pensions. It's been the women who've led that struggle. On the other hand, there are the unsupported mothers, what you all in the States call the welfare mothers, who have been fighting for an increase in their money and fighting very hard for that and saying, we work and we don't want to take a job outside the home. We already have a job inside the home. Then other women have been fighting for nursery schools and saying the state has a right to give our children a nursery school and for us to have some time for ourselves, not only if we want to go out to work, but if we don't want to go out to work, if we want to spend some time with our friends, we have a right to some time of our own. And that's also a wages for housework struggle. All of these are wages for housework struggles. And to the degree that we can come together and bring these struggles together, at each point where we are fighting, we will be much stronger and we'll be able to win. The unemployment now has really been to threaten us and to let us know that if we didn't continue to work and even to work harder, that we would have nothing. And most people have been saying, we're not going to take that, which is why the struggle for wages has not been undercut by the rising unemployment figures, which is the effect, for example, that it had in the 30s. It's had the opposite effect here. People say, well, it's just too bad. During the miners' strike, for example, in 1974, they asked some miners, but how long do you think you'll hold out during the strike? I mean, after all, your money will run out soon. And the miners said, on the radio, the shop across the road has a lot of food. And if we don't have any, the shop has it. And they had every intention of going and taking it. And no doubt the shopkeeper in a mining area would be very much in favor of that and saying, yes, yes, the government, no one is supposed to starve anymore and we're not going to have to be exploited in order to eat. And that's what we women are saying. Only it's not been clear that we've been exploited because we're doing things for the people whom we are related to. But the people whom we are related to are statistics in the government's eyes. Are the labor force in the government's eyes. They're not our husbands and brothers and fathers. They're three men, three units of production, and we are producing units of production for them all the time, and that our relation to them has hidden that that's what we are producing.
Of course.
Yes. And so when we say wages for housework, we say we're working, and we're working for the same boss that the man is working for, and he has a privilege over us because he has money that we don't have, and we don't want to be dependent on him.
One of the things that has been said against wages for housework is the fact that if we should get them, we'd be more stuck with housework than ever. Now, how do you answer that? I mean, the men wouldn't even be willing to share it with us then.
Well, we have to look and see why the men haven't been able to haven't been willing to share it with us in the past, and that's because they haven't had to. We've been so dependent on them that we've had to bargain with them. We've had to go on little sex strikes. I mean, that headache that we have occasionally, and that tiff that we decide to have a particular night and go through the 3 or 4 days of bad humor until we get something. And if we wanted something else, we had to make his best the meal that he liked and do the things that he likes and be nice to his family and all kinds of things. And we've been always very dependent on them, and they have known that they had that power.